This is kind of a daunting opportunity for me, so I trust as we tell a significant story today about God's hand of intervention in this place that you'll be encouraged and challenged and be appreciative of all that God has provided for you here now today as we reflect on the significant past of this place. Last Friday, January 26th, some of you might not be aware that the university celebrated a birthday. And since the centennial celebration of 1987, we have commonly called that Charter Day. It's had some other names, but Charter Day since then. Because that date in 1887 was the day Cedarville College was officially launched. And on or close to that date, here in chapel, someone has had the opportunity to, in a variety of ways, to reflect on the history and heritage of the university, kind of a rehearsal of some of the stories that history reveals to us about God's hand in the creation and sustaining of Cedarville University, then college, through the years. One of my roles at the university, as Jim said, is to serve as university archivist, responsible for collecting, retaining, preserving, and sharing the documents, resources, records, and memorabilia that tell the story of the university. And some of that collection is on the platform behind you, just to give a little flavor today to what we're doing. And my desire today in celebration of this year's birthday is to focus on God's provision in two critical moments of the university. As a librarian, I have been recently intrigued with a new genre of book which seems to have become popular. At least I have enjoyed them. Some of the recent titles read like this: A History of the Church in 100 Objects, or A History of American Sports in 100 Objects, The Civil War in 50 Objects, and if you really want a big one, The History of the World in 1,000 Objects. I don't know how you'd read all that. But the concept is to use objects to help tell the story. And as we celebrate another birthday for the university, I want to use a variation of that device by highlighting about 25 objects from the university archives to illustrate events surrounding two critical moments in the history of Cedarville University. And you will see the objects on the screens as we move through the story. When I'm asked as the university archivist to share a brief history of Cedarville University with those who are new here and not aware of our past, I immediately take them to two small exhibit cases in the library special collections, one representing the year 1890 and the other representing the year 1953. Those 2 years depict times of crisis, one when God intervened to allow the college to become a reality. The crisis was the dream almost died. And the other when God intervened to save the college from closure after serving students for 59 years. The crisis was when the college almost died. So let me begin with 1953. It was February of that year. Cedarville College had survived the Great Depression and the life-changing events of World War II, but now in debt, with a depleted endowment, and enrollment that had dropped to 95 students, and some poor leadership decisions, they had reached out to a number of other colleges with whom to pursue a merger in order to survive. But nothing had worked to stave off the inevitable. The words of the Dean of Instruction, Dr. Harold Kennedy, in this February 1953 newspaper article in the Columbus Dispatch were profound. You'll notice it's entitled, "Sentiment Won't Keep the Doors Open." And this is what he said. "Sentimentally, we ought to remain open, but from a logical and practical standpoint, we should close. Unless you believe in miracles, I'm afraid we will have to shut down." But miracles had been a part of the college's story before and would be again. So before we rehearse what finally happened in 1953, let's go back to 1890 and a previous crisis that prompted God's intervention, some would say in a miraculous way. The five founders of the college, Thomas Gibson, Richard Park, Hugh McMillan, Hugh McCollum, and James Morton, who was the pastor of the Reformed Presbyterian Church here in Cedarville from 1863 until his death in 1903, a long time, comprised a committee formed by the Reformed Presbyterian Synod to find a place to establish a Christian college for their young people. To make a long story short for now, the church in Cedarville had originally offered to provide the land for such a college. They didn't ultimately end up doing that. And there were people in Cincinnati interested in supporting it financially, so the college ended up here in Cedarville, of all places. The trustees prepared an articles of incorporation, and you see before you the original handwritten copy of that document, which states the purpose of the college. And I quote, "The object of said corporation is not profit, but to secure to its members and patrons the advantages of education in all departments of learning and knowledge, and especially education according to the rules and disciplines of the Reformed Presbyterian Church in North America, to promote the interest of said church." Now, with that document in hand, they obtained a charter from the state of Ohio on January 26, 1887, which provided the legal authority for the college to exist. And as you see, it is a simple piece of paper with an orange seal, but a powerful one nonetheless, because it is still the charter under which the university operates today. So with the charter in hand, property was purchased in 1888 from the Orr family by one of the trustees, 9.3 acres, on which Founders Hall now sits. And amazingly, the deed for that original plot of land was recently found about a year ago in a file in Founders Hall, which is amazing. We're still finding things in files around here. So now the fundraising efforts began. Unfortunately, by 1890, in the absence of meaningful financial support, the founders and first trustees of Cedarville College found themselves facing the end of their dream. In fact, at the 1890 trustee meeting, handwritten on the page before you, there was this recommendation: that the whole enterprise be abandoned, that the treasurer be instructed to sell the lot, the 9.3 acres, refund the money that had been contributed, and cancel the subscriptions. Fortunately, the Synod of the Reformed Presbyterian Church did not accept the recommendation, but what had started with much enthusiasm was now handicapped by a lack of sufficient funds to continue. At the height of this crisis, the board received word of a $25,000 bequest from the estate of the late Mr. William Gibson of Cincinnati, given in memory of his father. William had been a partner with his father, Peter, in the plumbing business in Cincinnati and was active in the Reformed Presbyterian Church there. He was not only a business owner, but a philanthropist who became, according to his obituary, a substantial citizen of Cincinnati. That must have been a significant thing to be, all right? In the preparation of his will, a printed copy of which you see before you, William had pledged significant assets to a number of Presbyterian denominational agencies, but none as large as the amount specified for Cedarville College. Now, we need to note that the will was written in 1888, while Cedarville College existed only in the name printed on its charter received the year before. There was no campus, there was no faculty, there were no students, there was no assurance, humanly speaking, that any of that would happen. Was this a foolish decision on the part of William Gibson or an exercise of faith? What is interesting is that the will was signed by Thomas Gibson, one of the three executors of the will, and a cousin of William, who was also, at that time, the chairman of the Board of Trustees of Cedarville College and one of the five founders. Who would have thought it, right? Could it be that Thomas had taken it upon himself to remind William that this new school proposed in Cedarville to minister to the youth of the Reformed Presbyterian churches needed resources to launch its ministry to those students? I have no idea if he said that or tried to do that. I can imagine he could have. However, in 1891, after a short illness, William Gibson died. So thus, a substantial bequest came to the trustees of Cedarville College at a most critical moment when they were considering abandoning the project. A miracle? Well, maybe so. To say that this was a substantial gift only needs that we reflect that in today's dollars, that $25,000 represents over $650,000. Significant today would be to me as certainly it was in 1891. So this exciting news revitalized the interest in getting the college off the ground again. So at the very next board meeting in 1892, recorded on this page, the trustees passed the following resolution, that in view of the fact that a bequest of $25,000 has been made to the Cedarville College by the late Mr. William Gibson, that an effort be made to revive an interest in that institution, and that the pastors in the different congregations be requested to bring the matter before their people at an early day and urge them to contribute liberally to the establishment of the college. Dr. David McKinney, who was the first president of Cedarville College, later said of this bequest at the most critical moment, and I quote, it was as if Providence had determined that the ministry go on. Well, in May 1894, the trustees authorized the construction or rental of a suitable building and the hiring of teachers to begin classes. A home on Route 42 north of Cedarville, recently used as an academy, was rented, and the college opened in the fall of 1894 with 32 students. That home, pictured here as it looked then, is still there and owned by one of Cedarville's current faculty members. What a marvelous place to live, where this place started. I don't have a picture of that first group of students. The earliest photo of the faculty and student body in the archives is from 1909. But as you see, it gives you a sense of the simplicity of the college experience during those early days. And during that first year, this building didn't even exist. Strong enrollment for the first year clearly indicated that the college would need to construct its own facility soon. It couldn't continue to rent. A college catalog, the first, was prepared for the next year, 1895-96. This is the only copy that we have in the archives, and it's very fragile. And you might be interested in knowing that the cost for that entire year, including room and board, was set at $117. Okay. We could return there if you'd like, I suppose. Yes, yes. What is today called Founders Hall was constructed in 1895, primarily funded by subscriptions, and the building was occupied for the start of classes during the fall of 1895. You see before you a photograph of the first day in Founders Hall in September of that year, with all the students and faculty hanging out front, and yes, some students hanging out the windows. It never changes, you know? Saturday, June 10th, 1897, dawned with the prospect of attending the first graduation of Cedarville College, announced for many by this commencement invitation. The graduation exercises for five seniors, whose names are listed on the invitation, would be held at the Opera House in downtown Cedarville. Martha McMillan, whose son Homer was in that first graduating class, recorded her impressions of that day in her journal. I'm just quoting a small paragraph of what she wrote. She said, Reverend Charles Frederick Pass of Cincinnati delivered the class oration. The principal thought he tried to impress on the class was to consecrate, devote, and dedicate their life, soul and body, to the best and highest good in life. The blessings and privileges we enjoy today are the gift and sacrifices of those who have gone before us, unquote. William Gibson's bequest might have done as much to make that first commencement possible as all of those current trustees, administrators, and faculty did, getting the college started, employing a president, hiring faculty, soliciting students, teaching the courses, and beginning the legacy of an education for students based on the Word of God. And even with the impact of the future challenges of World War I, the Great Depression, World War II, and the college's financial crises of the 1950s, there has not been a year since 1897 without a commencement at Cedarville University. So this is in no small measure the result of the gift of a man who never saw the reality of Cedarville College, but believed in its mission enough to give. A miracle? I'm sure that gift certainly felt like it to those whose dreams for the education of their young people could now become a reality. In 1915, Dr. W. Renwick McChesney was appointed as second president of Cedarville College. McChesney, here pictured with his wife, was the first faculty member hired by the college in the fall of 1894. His picture is also to my right back on the board. And he had served in several leadership positions since then. He came to the presidency with great anticipation for the college's future. And the text of his inaugural address was printed in this issue of the Cedarville College Bulletin for November 1915. Entitled The Ideal College, his address asserted that Cedarville College was founded in prayer, has been maintained by faith, and supported by sacrifice. And he noted that Cedarville had the supreme purpose to see to it that the students of Cedarville College shall retain the Christian integrity and truth which they bring with them to us. And he pledged that the college's example and teachings would continue to be committed, and I quote him, to strengthen and establish them in sound Christian faith. After the challenges of World War I, the early 1920s found the college involved in aggressive plans to expand facilities and raise endowment funds. And you see before you the marketing brochure from 1921 for that effort. A number of new buildings were proposed. However, only one was erected as a result of this campaign. During this period, the enrollment grew to 135. And some called the early years of McChesney's tenure as president as the golden years of the college. But that was soon followed by the impact of the Great Depression years and the early throes of World War II. And in 1939, Dr. McChesney's wife died. And as he approached 70 years of age, the pressures of the office of president and his desire for a younger man to take over those duties led him to submit his resignation, requesting that a replacement be found no later than June 1941. In his resignation comments, recorded in the minutes of the Board of Trustees on June 1st, 1939, that you see before you, he referenced the need for new leadership. Now let me tell you what he said. My life has been given to Cedarville College. I do not regret that I have stayed here. My prayers and the prayers of many others are registered in heaven for Cedarville College. God has blessed us abundantly. I came to Cedarville July 10th, 1894 to take up the work of the college. I assure you that as long as I live and enable to do so, I shall serve the college to the best of my ability. I am convinced that the needs of Cedarville College call for the services and consecration of a younger man who will undertake the work with wisdom and patience and trust in God. Unquote. When reading all of his remarks in this entry, the tone seemed to indicate from him challenges ahead. And little did he know that leadership and financial crises were on the horizon. Several short-term presidents followed, but the strong leadership did not. And soon the effects of World War II were upon the college. Thus, the financial challenges of the Great Depression, the impact of World War II on enrollment, poor leadership following Dr. McChesney's tenure as president, depleted endowments, and growing debt led the college to the brink of closure in the early 1950s. So we now return to 1953 and that newspaper article predicting the closing of the college. The leadership, enrollment, and financial crises had arrived. In 1890, the dream of the college had almost died, and now the college was on the verge of dying. The second critical time in the history of Cedarville had come. Cedarville needed either to merge with another college or close its doors. And remember, as Dr. Kennedy said in this newspaper article, absent a miracle, closure seemed inevitable. But again, some did believe in miracles. Strangely enough. Two men of the hour pictured before you, James T. Jeremiah on the left, a pastor in Dayton, Ohio, along with George Milner on the right, a businessman in Cleveland, Ohio, certainly did. Because the Baptist Bible Institute of Cleveland was looking for a property to transition into what they were calling a day school, because they were a night institute, for them that meant a four-year college, and not a Bible college. They wanted a four-year liberal arts college. James T. Jeremiah, a member of the BBI board and a pastor in Dayton, became aware of the difficulties at Cedarville, and after visiting with the Cedarville trustees, recommended that BBI consider purchasing the college. So he invited George Milner, who was also on the BBI board, and several other trustees to visit the campus and try to determine if this is what the Lord wanted for BBI. George Milner, like William Gibson in the 1890s, was a dedicated Christian businessman. As the founder of the Milner Electric Company of Cleveland, Ohio, he was familiar with facing the challenges of leadership. So on Friday, March 6, 1953, Milner and members of his committee were traveling to Cedarville for the first time. Do you ever remember traveling to Cedarville for the first time? This little place? Coming from Cleveland to this little place. So this group had been formed to investigate the possibility of Baptist Bible Institute relocating to Cedarville College and continuing to function under the college's original charter. That's significant. Dr. Cleve McDonald, a former faculty member here who is now with the Lord, shared in his book on the history of Cedarville College, which he wrote in 1966, some of Milner's recollections about that trip. He interviewed Milner for his book. And this is what he said in his book. Milner remembered that as he and his wife were having their morning devotions on this particular date, the date they were coming here, the scripture portions they read from the Daily Light, a devotional book, contained the following verses. The Lord your God went in the way before you to search you out a place to pitch your tents. As an eagle stirs up her nest, flutters over her young, spreads her wings, takes them, and bears them on her wings, so the Lord alone did lead them. The steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord, and he delighted in his way. And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are called according to his purpose. With us is the Lord our God to help us and to fight our battles. Milner further stated, in view of my search for a new location for our institute, this scripture portion seemed to directly apply to our need and made a profound impression on me. This was a defining moment for Milner and the committee as they headed for Cedarville. Maybe they sensed that perhaps the disappointments of the earlier unsuccessful attempts of BBI to purchase property had been really God's way of preserving them from maybe making a mistake and keeping them for this moment in a sense of divine mission. And the rest is sort of history. And just as William Gibson in 1890, Milner in 1953 was willing to invest for the Lord in a risk, not only with his own time, energy, and finances, and he did give some of his money, but also to confidently lead others to do the same. And when many others did not believe that there was a future for Cedarville College, Milner and Jeremiah were men who believed that a future for Cedarville was possible. And thus, they were the conduit for another miracle of God's provision. The headlines of this March 19, 1953 edition of the Cedarville Herald, yes, there was a paper in Cedarville, there were two of them at one time, announced the good news that the college would not be closing, but would be merging with the Baptist Bible Institute of Cleveland. And so the process of transfer began. As our own Dr. Murray Murdoch explained in his recent article in Cedarville Magazine, this is what happened, this process of transition. The Presbyterian trustees stated that if BBI would continue Cedarville as a Christian liberal arts college, they would give them the campus. Did you hear what I said? They would give them the campus. This would be achieved by half of the Presbyterian trustees resigning, the other half electing Baptist trustees, and then the remaining Presbyterians would resign, and the Baptists would elect the rest of their brothers. Thus, by the simple process of resignation and election, Cedarville became a Baptist liberal arts college under the original charter of 1887. The minutes of that April 4th meeting in 1953 you see before you, including the following comments about the purpose these new leaders had in mind for Cedarville College moving forward. And I quote, "We have a responsibility to our constituency to enlarge and strengthen the training for young people in the various fields of Christian services. To the present time, their training has been for that of the ministry and foreign missionary service. The plan is to continue the Bible training, but fortify this with a well-rounded liberal arts program, which will not only prepare young people for the ministry, but also other vocations in life in the field of public school teaching, science, medicine, etc." Now, the last part of that sentence, written 65 years ago, mentioning science and medicine, is revealing considering the current significant focus of this university, how prophetic those men were 65 years ago. Thus, Baptist Bible Institute assumed responsibility for Cedarville, including its debt, under the original 1887 charter. What did Dr. Kennedy say would keep the college from closing? A miracle. And another one happened. Now you know why Cedarville's yearbook was named The Miracle. by the student yearbook staff in 1953. The first miracle yearbook you see before you, published in 1954, clearly honored the Lord's provision in saving Cedarville College the year before. A new college catalog, pictured here, the first under the Baptist years, was quickly developed so that there could be classes offered right away in the fall of 1953. And the cost for the year was $800, including room and board. Such a deal, okay? Many BBI students moved here from Cleveland during the summer of 1953. I call them the ultimate risk takers, coming from the big city to the cornfields of southwestern Ohio. And classes started under the new BBI administration in the fall with about 100 students and 9 faculty members. I don't have a picture of that student body that year and the faculty, but this one from 1957 is not dissimilar from what it would have looked like 4 years before. That's everybody, students and faculty. James T. Jeremiah reluctantly became the 7th president in 1954. And let me read to you his thoughts at that time as recorded in a 1985 Dayton Daily News magazine article entitled, and I love this title, "The Reverend Who Saved Cedarville." I kind of like that. He says, "I was happy being pastor of my church. I didn't have any ambitions for the presidency. I asked everyone I knew, and they would as much say, 'Who wants to be president of a dead horse?'" Kind of crude. After resisting for some time, he finally relented. "I felt I should do it. I guess I saw no alternative, because I believed that God had provided this campus for our young people, and I did not believe it was provided for us to see it lost and closed. So I thought, well, I'll come over here for a couple of years, and maybe I can do something for it, and then I'll go back into the church." Well, that 2 years lasted 25. He was here. The first commencement under the new Baptist leadership occurred in the spring of 1954 with 20 graduates, 3 with bachelor's degrees, and 17 with 3-year diplomas. This commencement program from 1954 is significant, to me at least, because it assured a continuity for continuous commencement that was almost interrupted by a closure in 1953. So, but again, there has not been a year since that first graduation in 1897 when there has not been a commencement at Cedarville. That continuity has been continued. The next object will seem unusual to you. Why would I select this photo? Because this building has been here through all the history we have been reviewing today. In 1887, this building would have looked like this. It was already 34 years old, built in 1853, and serving as the church of our founders, pastored by James Morton, one of the 5 founders. Those who had the dream for a Christian college for the young people, and then more specifically for a college here in Cedarville, went every Sunday to this building. So the next time you walk or drive by Alfred Auditorium, remember that the congregation that met in that building until 1902, when it was donated to the college to be used as its first gymnasium, were those who dreamed big dreams and experienced God's grace along the way. Today, Cedarville University is here because of their commitment to the Lord, to Christian higher education, and to a small college in their town that would become something they probably never imagined. First, for the crown and the covenant of God, that was the Presbyterian motto, and now for the word of God and the testimony of Jesus Christ. And just let's not forget, there are also a few miracles along the way. So today, happy 131st birthday, Cedarville University.